So the Mishnah then begins by saying that a Jew sells wine to a goy, right? So Pasak ad shelo modad dama butar. If he made a price with the goy prior to measuring out the amount of wine that he's selling to the goy, then in that particular case, he's permitted to be paid by the goy, and it's not going to be considered money that he derives from Yayin Nesach. Because what have we learned about money from Yayin Nesach? If a Jew sells Yayin Nesach, then what? Doma Vasur. In other words, he can't use the money. Exactly. So this way, if he set a price, so even though the guy will pay him subsequently, but the price has already been made, and the agreement was made between them, and so in this particular case, the Jew can keep the money from the sale.
So
that's what we're trying to say.
He can have a contract to sell wine, but he can't sell it directly.
No, he does sell it to him directly, but by first establishing the price beforehand.
Which means he has a contract to sell it.
Right, exactly.
But if the man came in and he poured him wine and then that's what the rest of the Mishnah says.
That
right. That would be no good.
That's exactly what the Mishnah then says, that modad ad shelo pasak, in other words, he measured out the wine before he told him how much money he was charging him, then in that particular case, domo basur, then the money that he gets from the sale, he can't use it. I don't quite understand your question.
Before the problem with the Jews selling something to the point, especially if they're on the way to a festival, is the use that they would make of the product.
Either the product or the profit.
But the Jews keeping the profit, the Jews keeping the money.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the goy isn't making any use of the money or the profit. He's only going to make use of the wine.
Yeah,
now,
so
how does this relate, the fact that there's a fixed price or not a fixed price? How does that relate to that?
The question is, in whose possession? This is what is going to be the argument all over.
Okay.
In whose possession is the wine at the time of the sale?
Okay. All right.
If we say that the sale was made prior to the guy taking over possession of the wine, which is the first part of the Mishnah, none in that particular case. He can keep the money because it was still at the time when he sold it to him. It was Jewish wine, it was not Goyish wine. On the other hand, if the Goy already, he measured out the wine, obviously what did the Goy do? He took it, right? And then he first wanted to, so in whose possession now is the wine? It's now Yayin Nesach, because it's now owned by the Goy. Started out life as Jewish wine, but it becomes Goyish wine, okay? That's the problem with Yayin Nesach.
Right. That's my point. So then, you know, so how does this
so he can do what he wants with it.
Yes, I know. So how is this, you know, how does this whole ruling prevent it from becoming like a walk in yin or something? I guess that's what.
Or to put the question, go beyond that. The other question is, why should he be entitled to enjoy the money because he contracted it in advance instead of getting it over the counter? I don't understand.
I'm calling it a contract. Right.
He made an agreement. So
made
an
agreement,
with
exactly.
A contract,
okay.
He's got a contract.
Right.
So, in effect, from the time that he sold it and made the contract, the amount that he owes that man is already not his, even though he didn't pour it out.
The amount of wine that he owes.
He owes the amount of wine that he contracted for technically already belongs to the guy because he contracted to sell it. Now he's going to pour it out and he can enjoy the money that comes from it.
Okay.
But in the other case, the man comes in and he says, I want to have some...
Give me a gallon of wine.
Right.
And this is no good.
Right. And I guess we're both
struggling with the question. Well, he says, give me a gallon of wine. The Jew pours out a gallon.
Right.
He gives it to the goy. So now the goy has acquired that gallon of wine.
Right.
And then the Jew says, hey, you owe me $5 for this.
Right.
Exactly. So the goy pays him.
Right.
But can the Jew use the money? No, because the wine has now... the moment that it became the possession of the goy, so it became Yain Nesef. It's no longer, and the Jew is not allowed to derive any hanos, we said. You can't get any benefits from Yain Nesef.
Doesn't the Jew also, get possession of it under the contract? You pour it out to him after contracting for a price.
This is correct, but...
You have a really good point. He has legal possession.
Okay.
Yeah.
So.
That's the point.
That's one point.
Okay.
The other point is, who cares if eventually it now gets into the hands of the boy and he's free to use it as for pouring.
Of course.
Then why should the Jew be allowed to enjoy the profit from it?
Okay. You all raise very, very good questions, and so therefore, to my aid comes Rashi. All right, let's take a look at the Rashi right now, okay? Because Rashi obviously, feels that there's a difficulty also involved over there, okay? All right, so Rashi begins first with a quotation. Hamorcha yeyne le'oved kecho, right? He sells his wine to the idolater. Bosak ibn Maos, right? So he gave him a fixed price, right? Ad shelo bodan, before he poured it out, right? So in that case, what did the Mishnah say? It says, domo b'torah, right? That the money is permitted to the Jew. So he says, before ish b'gemara, the Gemara is going to explain that tamo iko, that the reason is as follows. The Muke law Mishum Mishiko be Oved Kovim Kono. Now this already requires an explanation. Okay. What is Mishiko? The answer is, have you ever heard the term Kinyan?
Sure. Yeah.
What does Kinyan mean?
Acquisition.
It means acquisition, exactly. Okay, you acquire it.
Yeah.
You know, the word kadon, Hebrew, means to buy something.
But
it really also means to acquire something. Okay? That's the idea.
Yeah.
All right. So, how is Kinyan affected? The average person, you and I and so on, we go into a store, what do? We pay the money, and we figure that now it's our article. It belongs to us, right? However, in the time of the Talmud, that was not considered sufficient. It only became sufficient when you actually did something physically with what it is that you purchased. So, they are going to use the term meshicha, which means literally you draw it to yourself, you take it to yourself, okay? But it could be affected in various ways. For example, if you lift up the object, that's also a form of acquisition. when they lived in an agricultural society where you bought an animal, for example. So, you know, you had to pull the animal by, let's say, a cord, a strap or something like that. And when you pulled the animal, so that was acquiring it. Or if you harnessed it and you plowed something, a little bit with it or something. So that indicated that now this was your possession. Okay? Okay. So the goy simply handing money to the Jew is not enough if you say that the goy also has to do what?
He
has to hold it, right, has to take it, lift it up, hold it, whatever he has to do. And so that's the Mashiach that they're talking about. So everything would be fine, except that there are two different points of view. Can a goy acquire through Mashiach, or can a goy not acquire through Mashiach? That's what the argument of the Gemara is going to be. Okay. Well, you know, whether technically you can. A Jew, we know, can acquire through Mashiach. By the way, there are other ways of kinyan also. The one that we're probably most familiar with is, for example, when you make the rabbi your agent,
right.
You know,
right.
To sell chametz, right, and you hold it. That's called kinyan sudar, in other words, by means of a garment and so on, okay?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But the idea is the same. I mean, that, you know, by holding on and taking it or something like that. So now you have established the fact that you have the possession of it. Okay? All right. So, when the goy was told what the price was and he agreed to it, it still was the wine of the Jew who's selling it. Because the goy had not yet
taken physical
possession of it. Okay,
that's
so
a different law.
Right. So this is what Rashi is explaining to us right now. Right. So Hilchach says Rashi, Kishemodet, when he measures out the wine, right, Haina Mashiach Ukaniya, Ove Kachavim Miyad. The Havala Israel Zuze Gabi Devikah Mahalvor. Okay. Now this goes into the second explanation that Rashi gives over here. It says, first of all, the goy has now acquired the wine, right? But remember, did he pay immediately? If he had paid immediately, there wouldn't be any question that it's the Jews. You know, that the money can be used by the Jew, right? But the Jew said to him, this is going to cost you $5. And he says, okay, measure me out, and so on and so forth. So Rashi makes the point that it acts as if the goy has taken out a loan for the amount of money that the Jewish storekeeper told him that it would be, so that even if he pays him the money, after the measurement has been made, he's only paying back money to the Jew that he had agreed in the form of a loan. You understand? So technicality, obvious. But this is why he's permitted, because can you collect a loan that's due to you from a goy? Absolutely. There's no question about that. Has it sunk in yet?
No. But he was trying to find an explanation for us.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah. That was Rashi's
position. This is Rashi, right. This is what Rashi is making the point.
So
okay.
You're saying, in effect, he's not buying the wine if you're paying a loan? Is that what you're saying?
That the money, which he stipulated to begin with,
yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Is now technically like a loan until it is repaid by the goy. But the wine was still the Jewish wine until the goy took possession of it, okay? And then he pays him. But what is he paying? He's not paying for the wine. He's paying back a loan to the Jew, okay? Right.
And this is a constructive loan, so every time the vintner or the vendor sells the barrel of wine to the Goy, as if constructively the Goy borrowed the money from the Jew necessary to pay for the wine? Is that what we're doing here?
If he stipulates in advance the amount of money. Yeah, that's correct. Right. But what if he didn't do so? So then the second part of the Mishnah tells us what? That, right, the Goy says, give me a gallon of wine, takes out, and he gives him a gallon of wine, and then he says, okay, now you owe me so and so much money. Ah, wait a minute, no siree, because the Goy has already taken possession of the wine, so it's now Yain Nesa, technically. Okay, I mean, we say if a Goy touches the wine, it becomes Yain Nesa. Okay.
You know, I see
that's part of the problem that we have today, you know, with non-Jewish wine or
right. The reason the Jew can enjoy the wine at the profit in the beginning,
right,
when he makes a set price, is because they're saying it's a loan. Now, if they say it's a loan, what they're saying is that, in effect, the Jew had control of the money from the very beginning. He never really lost control of it, and therefore he certainly has right to enjoy the money because it's his money. To
right,
even
right.
Before the sale took place.
Yep.
And in the second example, where they can't make a definite price of the supply.
Right.
I'm telling you, that is a creative accounting of the people in Enron.
That is really great. But I want to ask another question, if I may, to clarify.
Yeah. Okay.
When you say it's a loan, is this only a verbal thing?
Right.
It's not that the Jew has actually given him money that he's going to get back.
No, no.
There's no money exchange.
No, no.
But the guy says he is repaying a loan. He's lending him the money.
It's as if, to begin with.
Yeah.
He's lending him the money.
He's lending the Jew
the
money.
He stipulated how much it's going to cost.
Oh, so I'm lending you the money. I don't have the cash, but I'll give you merchandise to repay the loan. Yeah, he's giving him wine.
Not necessarily. Not necessarily. I mean, the guy is ready to pay the money. If he wasn't ready to pay any money for it, that's already a different category.
The guy pays the money, but he says it's a loan.
Only technically it counts as a loan.
It counts as a loan. He doesn't say that.
No, he doesn't say to the guy, okay, I'm giving you a loan, I'm lending you, let's say, $5 or something like that. Doesn't have to say that.
Yeah.
All he has to say to him is that this wine is going to cost you $5 a gallon.
And that's as if he was lending
And the guy says, okay.
So it's as if he had lent him the money.
Right. Exactly. Right.
Okay.
It's as if he had been paid. It's as if he had been paid in advance. So I said, if he were paid immediately, even before measuring it out, he wouldn't have this business.
I understand that.
Right.
But now I understand what you're getting at.
Right.
Very strange.
Yes. Well.
That's more than selling your business for a dollar. You know, that's. Wow.
Back before there was any Yiddish.
Talk about a way to get around something.
That's a way of our understanding it, so it makes sense to us.
Right.
Yeah,
I mean, we have to understand. I mean, there are certain. I mean, this obviously reflects a practice of those days.
Wow.
Now, was Rashi the one who. I mean, was this. You would know this. Was this principle.
The Gemara seems to hint at it.
Okay,
all
right.
It doesn't say so in so many words, but it hints at it.
All right.
Okay.
So Rashi explains it.
He's explaining it, exactly.
Wow.
As I say, the basic problem that comes in over here is whose opinion do we follow? That the Goy acquires through taking hold of the object, or a Goy does not acquire through it? That's a different problem already, and that's going to be debated.
between.
That's
going to be debated. The Gemara, right?
Wow.
Yeah. So we're all willing to say, in other words, that a Jew acquires this way. Does a Goy also acquire it the same way or not? According to one authority, yes, same way as a Jew acquires. Another authority says no. Okay. According to another opinion, when the Goy pays money, that's all that you have to do. I mean, because the payment of money is already a way to acquire. It's a complicated Indian, you know, because you have different opinions about the validity of how you acquire something.
So the validity, really, the whole point of all of this has to do with with doing business with the goyim in the first place, in terms of particularly wine.
Yeah, with wine. I mean, yeah, it does have that problem.
We wouldn't have to worry about it. If we were
always
selling to our own people.
Yeah, right. That's not the problem, exactly.
That we had to know how to function in a world where we restrict our commerce.
I mean, you sell to a Jew, you can sell it, you know, you simply put it down in the book, you know, you get your payment maybe once a month or every week or whatever it may be. I mean, you go into the small, I call it, you know, into the small grocery store where they know the individual families over there. So, you know, so naturally he has a register which, you know, he keeps accounts of how much, and then you pay him. Yeah.
Wow. So what would happen if a Jew owned a little tattle? My grandmother's father, on the farm, they had a shanky.
A shank, yeah. Okay.
A little wine.
Yeah, they would come in, right,
and
they'd get a drink, exactly.
People,
right, of course.
Well, the townspeople would be mainly the Jewish.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm assuming he's selling kosher wine.
Yes.
What happens if the goyim come in?
Once he has sold the wine, taken the money from the goy, okay, tells him so-and-so, the goy pays in advance. So in that particular case,
so
that's the Mashiach.
I mean,
right, exactly.
Do you have any of that wine?
Either a shank or a geshank, right.
This is a little Jewish shanky.
Either they would say a shank or a geshank,
What?
They also use the expression a geshank. Yeah, also, right. So like a little tavern or something like that.
I picture it sort of almost like in the basement of the house.
Right. So I still remember in the days of Prohibition that we had our Jewish winemaker, bootlegger, and so on.
My grandfather made his own. My grandfather made his own.
We would sometimes make our own too.
This was an additional.
Amar is of the opinion Meshicha b'yoyved koychovim koina. He says, when a goy takes hold of it, then he has acquired it. Okay, he's gained possession of it, like by a Jew, right? And he says, Teda, I'll give you proof. He says, you know that the hane parsai b'shadle pardashde lahanode v'lo hadri behu. He says, the Persians, you know, meaning the Goyim, of course, you know, don't forget, Babylonia was already part of the Persian Empire in those days. There was no separate Babylonia. I mean, Cyrus, you know, in the year, the 500s prior to the Common Era already had conquered Babylonia, and it's now part of the Persian Empire. Okay, so the Jews lived among the Persians, essentially. So, at any rate, he says that the Persians, meaning the Goyim, you know, the Persians, they have a custom, he says, that they send pardashne to each other, and it's not returned. All right, so now the question is, what are pardashne? So, Rashi simply says, doron, they send a gift. The Tosfos has a somewhat different interpretation of what this is. He says that when they wanted to make a sale, they would send like samples. They would send a small amount to the other person. And then the person to whom they sent it, you know, acquired possession of it, because he never returned it to the original seller. Obviously, if he liked it, he would order more. If he didn't like it, so he's under no compulsion to return it. You see. Sort of reminds me of all of the million things that you get in the mail that you never solicited. What are you going to do with them? So, on that basis, Amemer holds, then that Mashiach works for a Goy as well as for a Jew. So, Rav Ashi, naturally, he comes and he says, no. Rav Ashi Oma Le'Yoylon, he says, the members who Zokti says, Eim Elecho Mashiach B'Yeva Kechovim Eino Koine, right? I say that Mashiach does not work for a Goy. So why didn't they return those samples or those gifts that they got? Says the robbers ruchahu to the kitalahu. It's because they're too proud to send it back again. They felt that it would be too much of an insult or something like that if they send it back to them. But they did not acquire it through Mashiach. This is the point that rather Ashi is making. Omar Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi wants to explain his stand. He says, "Minah mina law." Why am I making this statement to you? You know, this is not acquired. Minah omar hu Rav lahadhu sab Yusu. He says, I base it on a statement that Roth made to Jewish wine merchants. When he told them, he says, when you measure out the wine to Goyim, take your money first from them and then measure it. The Elo Nikitu Bahadaihu Zuze, and if you don't get money from them immediately, then in that case, usifchu, give them a loan, v'hada shekilo bidayu, and then they'll take it from you. Tiheche detehzi halvor gabayu, so that this will be like a loan to you. So now we see where Rashi is getting the idea.
It's
there in the Gemara. Okay. That's why we have to have a little bit patient sometimes and see, you know, what the text of the Gemara is. But obviously now we have two competing ideas, right? That of Abemar and that of Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi is calling upon Rav's action to show that you are permitted to either get the money in advance or tell them that you're loaning them the money for payment. Right. Tell them that you're loaning them the money for payment. Okay.
Did he, Rav Ashi, actually think that there's going to be a physical transaction that you're going to give the money to the boy and the boy would give it back to him? This loan, or did he just also think, as we do, that it's a constructive idea?
Well, that, you know, I can't read his mind very well, but the fact is, I mean, for all practical purposes, this is what it is. It says, okay, you don't have to pay me this minute, but you'll pay me afterwards, okay? But he already stipulated in advance how much they owe him before he measures it out. This is the point. Because if you don't do this, he says, then it would be as if the Yai Nesach belong is in your possession, that is the Jewish possession. Because if you didn't, you know, make the stipulation, you didn't get the money in advance or make a stipulation in advance that you'll owe me the money for this or something like that, but if you simply measured out, right, and then demanded the money, then what? Then in that case, that money is far fallen, lost. You lost them. Of course, as we said in the Mishnah, you know, that it's also it's prohibited. The Yisal Kedatech Mashiach Bevekoven Koyne, and if you're of the opinion that Mashiach works as a method of acquisition, then in that particular case, we'll go to one more line on the top of the next page. Wait a minute, that's the same one? No, that's the one. Okay. You got it, please. He says, it would mean that the guy has acquired it by, but even though he has acquired it, it does not become Yainesef according to this theory until the guy actually touches the wine itself. As I say, this is a little bit puzzling to me, the Memes Gazot, but we get the picture of what he's trying to say. The picture is, of course, make sure that you get paid in advance. Or you stipulate that you owe me the money and you'll pay me the money afterwards. Okay. Then do the action. But if you don't do it, instead you simply measure out, give it to him, and then you want payment, then that's no good. At that point, payment is now payment for Yai Nesach, because until the guy actually touched the wine, not just took it, remember, this is the contrary opinion. This is the contrary opinion. That's why I say it's a little puzzling, okay? Because you have to sort of separate the two characters. One of them is Abemar, who said when the guy holds on to it, he's already acquired it, perfectly valid acquisition, as compared to Rav Ashi, who's of the opinion that until the guy actually touches the wine itself, not simply right, so he has not acquired it, even though he has actually got. Okay, so we'll keep that in mind, because my throat again, I can feel. So we shall continue from the top of the page next week. Well, let's see, tonight is the 6th of December.
December 5,
pardon me. I'm always looking ahead, I guess. It's also the second night of Hanukkah. The year is 2007. we are now at the top of Avodah Zorah, Ayin Aleph, Amud Beis. Just to find the right place. All right, just want to summarize again what we heard last week, that there's a difference of opinion at this particular point on the problem of how does a person acquire. With Jews, we know how a person acquires, because there are definite rules. As I pointed out last week, with Jews, we would think that by just paying the money, you automatically acquire the object. But the law of the Talmud is not quite that. What it says is that you have to take it to yourself. You draw it to yourself. You lift it up. Something, you have to perform some sort of an action that makes it the acquisition. That solidifies it, okay? As I pointed out, there are also other forms of kinyan. That's, for example, the one that we are familiar with, the kinyan sudar, wherein if you make an agreement with somebody, you can hold, you know, two sides of a handkerchief, right? You hold on, the other one holds on, and so on. And or if you don't have a handkerchief, you can do something else. But you indicate by means of that action, you know, that you have actually acquired possession. This is what we mean by Kenyan, to acquire possession. Question is, however, with a non-Jew, how does a non-Jew acquire? And in this particular case, we saw that there are two conflicting views. One of them was about Maimar, who says that a non-Jew acquires exactly the same way that a Jew does. In other words, by holding on, by whatever it may be, lifting up, whatever you do, you know, some action that you perform, this is what solidifies the acquisition. And on the other hand, Rav Ashi, who says it doesn't work for the non-Jew. So what does this have to do with what we're working on? And the answer is the question that we had about a Jewish storekeeper who sells wine, right, to a non-Jew. And the question is, at what particular point does the wine become Avodah Zorah, Yayin Nesach, right? So that under those circumstances, the Jew is not allowed to take any money. So what it, remember what the suggestion was?
They have to have a contract.
Yes, right. First he specifies what he wants. Right, okay. The guy pays him. So after that, then it's not a problem. But what if he didn't specify how much he wanted, but the guy went, took, you know, and the Jew measured out to him the wine, and then that's right. If the guy then paid money, so in that particular case it didn't work, because that money is forbidden to the Jew, because this is Yayin Nesach. Of course, when I say a guy, I don't mean the goyim of today. I mean, you know, the idolaters. Okay? So this was a suggestion that Rob made also. And he also made another suggestion that we had towards the end of the previous side of this daf. Namely that if the guy doesn't have the money, so what should the Jewish storekeeper do? Lend him the money. So then that the guy owes him the money, and all that he's doing is that he's repaying a debt instead of purchasing an object, you see. So that way, this was a suggestion that Roth made. Okay. So, this is what we start with at the top of the page, then over there, okay? I'll read the last line of the previous page again, because this is the introduction to this. It says, the Eve Salkadate, if you think that Mashiach, the Evid Kehovim Koina, that the Goy, by just taking the object, you know, to himself, that he acquires it as a result of that, that's all that he needs, right? So, Midamashko Evid Kehovim Kiniyo, right? But Yeh Nesek Lehavi Adadogabe. If you follow that system, then when the Goy picks it up, then automatically he has acquired it. Okay. But when does it become Yain Nesach? According to this theory, Yain Nesach Lehave Yadadogobe. It isn't until he actually touches the wine that it becomes Yain Nesach. Simply that the fact that the Goy acquired it, it doesn't immediately turn it into Yain Nesach. He actually has to still actually touch it in order to make it become. So, if that's the case, let's get back to the Jewish storekeeper. Second line, okay? E de kod kayol the rabbi lemona de Yisrael ochinabe leitzvicha. Says, if we're talking about a case where the Jewish storekeeper measured out the amount that he is selling, right, and he put it into a vessel which belongs to a Jew. In other words, not the Goy's vessel, but the Jewish vessel. And then he hands it over to him. Then in that particular case, this doesn't really concern us, because it has not yet become Yain Nesach until the fact that the Goy takes it. When the Goy took from the Jewish keli, right, from the Jewish vessel, at that point it still was not Yain Nesach. It's only afterwards, after he took it to himself, that he acquired possession. And as we said a moment ago, when does it actually become Yain Nesach? Becomes Yain Nesach when he actually touches it. So,
touching the part that he bought affects where it came from as well.
Touching the wine itself.
Touching the wine.
Right.
That he bought.
Right. Right.
Now creates a problem with the original place where it came from.
The point is that it's sort of retroactive. I mean, we're not talking about such a case, because then we would say that the wine still had not become Yain Nesach at the time when the Jew sold it. And said, so if it was not Yain Nesach at the time that he sold it, then in that particular case, the money would be permitted to him.
Okay?
I mean, this is the idea.
So if he sold it in a Jewish vessel, it would not be Yain Nesach?
Right. Not until the Goy actually does something with it, right?
But he can buy it at that point, and it's
right.
And
right.
It's okay.
Right. Right.
As long as it's in the Jewish vessel.
Right.
It doesn't fill up the Goy's vessel.
Right. We could say, like, for example, it's not an exact parallel, but let's say a guy buys a bottle of Manischewitz wine. Okay, I don't care. Right? At what point would it become Yain Nesach? Only if he took it and, he made a libation with it or something or other. Okay. But otherwise, simply buying it, the vessel was still technically a Jewish vessel. Right, the wine was still Jewish, so it's only until afterwards. I mean, that would be
right.
So would a Jewish storekeeper be permitted to sell it? Yeah, absolutely, no problem over there. So, what is the problem? He says, "Lo tzricho." Says, when do we need this interpretation? It's dekor kayol v'romei lemona d'avik kachovim, right? When he measures it out and he puts it into the Goy's vessel. There already, now you have a question, okay? So he says, sof sof, in the final analysis, he says, Kimata la viro de bono kenia. Says, okay, when the wine came into, literally the avira, into the air, but it doesn't mean that, but it means into the area of the goy, right? So at that time, the goy acquired the possession of it, right? But yei nesach lehave did not become, however, yei nesach ademotri la risa demotri, until it came actually into the bottom part of the vessel, where presumably what was there was some drops or something or other that had been there previously. And so when the Jewish wine came into that particular area, it mingled with it and it became Yedosa automatically. Okay, no longer Jewish wine. Okay. So Shmamino, if this is the case, then from this we gather the fact that Nitzok Chibur Lo, which means that simply pouring by itself does not make it Yed Nesach. It's only
even if it's clean and he pours wine in it, it's doesn't it make it
right? Well, the suspicion is that he had used wine before already over there, and therefore if he had used wine before, even though it looks presumably clean, but there may still be something absorbed over there that when it comes in. This is part of the problem that they have. For example, you have some liquors or whatever you want to call them, okay, that are, let's say, aged in a cask which held wine at one point. So the question is, what is the status of such liquors? Can it be considered as kosher or not? And the answer is that we say no. So we have to be a little bit wary about that. This is why people who are very careful, they'll look to see what does it say concerning it. If it says aged in old wine barrels or something like that, then in that case we can't consider it kosher. But it's the same principle that we have over here. Yes.
Is this vessel that the idolater had, is this an ordinary vessel? Or is it something that...
It's an ordinary vessel, as long as it held wine. Yeah. His wine. So,
It's it could be an ordinary vessel, or it could be a
sacramental
vessel.
Right. I'm not talking necessarily about...
Whatever it is, because of the residue.
Exactly. I'm not talking about a chalice necessarily, you know, that they use in the church or something like that. We're not talking about that. But his own container. If he had used wine in it before, then in that particular case, that's it. And the suspicion, I guess, would be that he may have. So in order to be extra careful, we avoid that situation. So.
They use earthen jugs a lot, right? Earthen jugs and leather, also the...
in those days, yes.
The leather, whatever you call them.
Right, 2,000 years ago, these were wineskins.
Wine skins.
Right, exactly. Right.
So there would be a degree of absorption. In
Absolutely. Yes. Certainly, as far as the earthenware is concerned.
Right.
I mean, this is why, I mean, we say that, clay cheres, what are you going to do with earthenware?
Right.
It becomes treif, you have to throw it away. You can't use it. Okay. So, anyway, the Gemara now says, lo, no, says, maybe that's not such a good argument, he says. Ye, the docket lay yovit kachovim, lechli biyodei, hochidame leitzvim. He says, maybe if the guy simply took his vessel in his hand, in this particular case also it would not yet make it into Yei Nesach, just holding the kli. So
Therefore, what does the Gemara say now? It says the manacha aron. So we have to assume that if he puts the vessel on the ground and then wine is poured into it, then in that particular case it becomes yainesa. Well, it's really a little bit puzzling to me, I'll be honest with you, because it's a little hard to follow the argument going back and forth over here, because of the vital analysis. I think that Amema was right, that the goy acquires immediately, and everything that we're trying to do with this particular point is something to prove that, you know, the goy doesn't acquire it. Of course he acquires it, but that's why they come in with the second argument that even if he acquires it, then what? Then it doesn't become Yainesuch until. And until, what is the until? So the until it comes into, either the goy touches the wine or it mingles with wine that he had there previously or something like that. This is how the argument seems to be working right now. Okay. Right, unless he sells it to him under the circumstances that we said, where if he stipulated beforehand, and particularly if he was able to collect the money beforehand, and then in that case, there wouldn't be any shadows. Right. Sylvia, you had a question?
No.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, good evening. We're on Ayin Aleph Amud Beis. Okay. In other words, 71B. Okay. All right. So now the Gemara continues. So the question is, Sikdei Lei Kelov, why can't the very fact that, you know, the Kli, once it's inside the Kli, isn't that enough for him to acquire possession? So he says, Shema Minav, from this we learn, Taka, that what? That Kelov Sheloi Keach, Bereshus Mecher Lei Kodot, that the Kli, in other words, the vessel of the customer, as long as it's still within the possession of the, that is the wine, they have to say, is still in possession of the Jew, so he did not acquire yet possession. Okay, so is this the way the argument is one? He says, lo. So he says, no, not so. In truth, I have to tell you, Kona lokeach, right? In other words, the customer, the goyish customer, did acquire with his keli, right? The hochma bayaskino, and what kind of a case are we talking about over here? Kegon the ikar arkeves yain apume de kuzanta, where there is wine which is still retained on the mouth of the vessel or the goblet or whatever it is. I mean, it's a foreign word, this kuzanta, well, exactly what it means, so, but the guess problem is right. According to Rashi, kuzanta, it says pach katada. It's a small jar that, you know, you pour from a barrel into this small jar. So there is still some wine on the mouth of this this little bottle, this little jar. The kama in sikhlei, which means that as each drop comes into the container, inasmuch as there is already on the rim some wine over there that doesn't belong to the guy, after all, it's his keli, right? So each Jewish drop that comes into contact, what happens? It mingles
And it becomes Yainasa. Right, this is the idea. Right. Okay. So, having established that, Uchaman, in accordance with whose opinion would this be? So he says, the Loka Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Definitely, it's not Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel's opinion. The Yi Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, because if it were his opinion, Ha Omar, didn't he say that Mocha Kule Ba'ev De Kaichalim? Chutz b'debei yaynes ha-shibo. In the situation that arose where there was a mixture of yaynes and Jewish wine and it was sold, so according to Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, who was much more lenient in his ruling in this particular case, he said that if you know the amount of Yain Nesach that there was in this mixture, then you take the price and you give back that particular amount of money. But do you have to give back the entire money? The answer is no. So he wants to make it easier for the Jewish storekeeper in such a situation, okay? Because what did we say before? We said that the minute, you know, that it becomes Yain Nesach, then in that particular case, he can't get any money for it anymore. So he's trying to make it easier. So far, okay? Looks like a good reason, but obviously it's not what the Gemara has said, because they don't agree with that point of view. Midehu Tama. Okay, this would seem to be a good reason. Ella, however, the Rav, how about the opinion of Rav that we quoted before, where he said, you know, make sure you get the money beforehand, right? Omar Rav, did Rav say Halachic Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, that Halachic Father Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel says Chavis bechavis avol lo yayin biyayin, which means if barrels were mixed up, they haven't been opened as yet, right? Barrels haven't been opened yet. We know that, let's say, one of the barrels contains Yain Nesach. Okay, so under those circumstances, according to Rav, then the theory of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel holds true. In other words, you can sell, and after the total amount, you take off the amount of one barrel as compared to the rest. You know, let's say if there are 10 barrels, so it would be, you take off one tenth. If there are only 5 barrels, so you would take off 20% or something like that. You know, that's the way. But he says, yayin be yayin, however, where wine mixes with wine, then in that particular case, the whole thing becomes what? Yayin nesu. Okay. I don't know if I'm going to have a voice left in a few minutes. Okay.
Don't you have your little candies to moisten your throat?
Yeah, I have my, I took a couple of cough drops. I should have got this helpful. Supper time, I don't know. I didn't feel that.
Eggs helps the boys.
Huh?
Eggs.
Are good for what?
Helps the boys.
Oh, helps the boys. Yeah, once upon a time when I was a kid, they used to tell you, right, that if you swallowed raw eggs,
that
helped.
Yeah.
And no special if you had a goggle muggle, you put it in the
right. Yeah, that's what my mother in law used
right,
to do.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Who knows? Right. Right. Raw egg. Right. And milk or cream or something.
And
right.
And
a little mashka too, a little drink. Yeah, a little liquor or something.
Yeah.
We shouldn't discard.
something because it goes back many, many years.
What kind of liquor did they put into it?
Probably.
Was it a brandy?
Yeah, right. You know, back in the old days, who knew about all the variety of liquors that you have today? Well, they had Bronson. Bronson. And, or schnapps. I don't know whether there was any real difference between schnapps and Bronson's. I think Bronson was really brandy, and schnapps would be sort of like rye or something like that.
Whiskey, lemon, and honey is supposed
to be good. Yeah, could be.
Well, mainly they put in the whiskey so you shouldn't feel the pain. That was it.
All right. Listen, if you get relief even for a few moments, it's also a good point. Okay. Well, I mean, basically, so now they ask Akasha on this. Okay. It says, Halakeach grutois midoiv de kechavim. Umotsu behen avedis kechavim. אם את שולי נוסד מויס, מושך יחסים. אם שנוסד מויס, מושך, אם שנוסד מויס, מושך, זאת יוכל גם המלך. Okay, let's take it phrase by phrase. Halakeach grutois. You take scraps of metal. Okay? In other words, you buy scrap metal from an idolater. Okay. And among the scrap metal, what did you find? You find an idol, Avedis Kochavim. Okay? So, if the Jew had not yet paid the money, right? Then in that case, Moshach, he could hold back and Yaksir, and give the idol back to the Goy. And then pay him for the rest, obviously. Okay? So in other words, as long as he hasn't paid, then we have to say what? It's not his possession. Right? Okay, it's not his possession. But what happens, Chas v'Sholom, you know, if Im Shenosan Moritz, if he's already paid the money and then he finds the idol, right? So what can he do in that particular case? So the answer is Yehlech B'Yam HaMelech. He has to go take it to the Yam HaMelech and throw it over there. Why? Because he's not allowed to have any Hanor from the idol. He can't give it back to him because now it's in his possession once he paid the money.
Could sell it to a non-Jew?
Well, that's already a different question. If he sells an idol, then in reality, that doesn't work. Because you're not supposed to have any Hanoah, any kind of profit, whatever, you know, from an idol. So, of course, we learned, if the guy, this we had months ago, the guy has the ability to do what? He can disfigure it. Do you remember, right? Break it into pieces and stuff like that. And so, so if he does that, then it loses its
idolatry
status, right? Exactly. But here, obviously, we're not talking about just a little piece of an idol. We're talking about an actual idol itself. So by getting rid of it before he paid the guilt, so it means that it's not his possession. But if he paid the guilt, then it belongs to him, and in that case, nothing he could do except to simply throw it into the Yom HaMelech.
Right. But he found, the thing is, that what does he have to throw in the Yom HaMelech? The money that he...
Could be the money, but we're not talking about that. We're talking about the idol
itself.
Right.
Because the money he has paid already, right?
Right.
But if he throws the idol away, can he keep the scrap metal?
If he throws it into the Yom HaMelech, yes. He can keep the rest of it.
If it doesn't sink in the young.
No, even if it doesn't sink, but that salt is going to destroy most things. Right. I'm sure it'll corrode over there. My impression, the Amamela, besides the fact that you don't sink over there, that the edge over there, where, you know, you're about to go into the water, the sun beats down on it. It's like a magnifying glass. And if you go barefoot, as I did, oh boy, you burn the soles of your feet over there. It's like, you know, you ever experimented with trying to light a fire with a magnifying glass in the sun? That's what it was like. Okay, so the Gemara wants to get the theory over here. Is Salkadatev, if you're of the opinion that Meshicha B'yovet Kechavim Goyna, that the Goy acquires, right, by just getting the object in his possession, then am I Yachsir? So why should the Jew give back the idol? So Amar Abaye Mishum Nemechse Ki Mekaktus. So Abaye says, because it looks as if it is a sale done by mistake.
Well,
I have to explain to you.
An error. Yeah,
right. And an error has no validity. I mean, if it's a sale and there's an error involved in it, then it has no validity and you give it back. So, if we would apply this same thing to us, go into a store, they tell you one price, you pay it, and then you discover that they jacked up the price on the cash register or something like that. So, what are you going to do? So you go back, and you say, I want to give this back again, right? Unless you don't want to bother. I had a case recently. I bought a jar of gefilte fish in the Big Y. It was marked something like $6.59. And when I came home, I see it says $7.59. But when did I look at it? I looked at it after we'd already started in 2 weeks. So I said, all right, I followed. I made a mistake. But technically, I could have gone back to them and say, you overcharged me. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's important to watch the...
Right.
To check the slip before you get into your car.
Right.
They do make mistakes. I picked up on some recently.
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, you see on the shelf a certain price over there, a sale price or something, and the register that has no, it's not there. Right. Yeah. So this is Mekartos, okay? Omar Rova. Rava said, Reisha Mekatos, Sefer Lav Mekatos. Says the first case that we talked about, that definitely there's a mistake involved in it, but the second one there isn't. Eloma Rava, but Rava says, no, Reisha Sefer Mekatos, the whole deal is a mistake. Okay. The Reisha, so, in the first case, the Lo Yahim Suzi, Lo Nechse Kavit is Kechovim Beyond Yisrael. In the first case, as long as the Jew did not pay the goy, then it doesn't seem that the Jew was the possessor of the idol. And sefer, the Yohiv Zuzi, however, in the second instance, where he paid money, right? And then afterwards, he realizes, you know, that he has this idol. So, Mechsei Ka'avid is Kekalim Be'ad Yisrael. But it looks to the Olam right now that it's as if it was the possession of the Jew. And of course, what did we say? So as a result, he can't give back to the, he cannot give the idol back, because now the Jew owns it And what can he do with it? Bafa Savek. Right, in the Yamamela. Okay. Omalei Markashisha, Breda Rav Chista. Markashisha, the son of Rav Chista, said to Rav Ashi, Tashma, he says, listen, he says, America, Yeda, Levit, Kechovim, right, somebody sells his wine to the goy. Posakat Shalei Modad, and he stipulated what the price would be before measuring out, then Dom of Matorim. In that particular case, we said that the money is okay. The Amit Mishicha Bevet Kechov Bein Hakoina. And if you say that Mishicha doesn't work for a goy, in other words, the goy does not acquire just by taking hold of the object, right? Then Amai Dom of Matorim. Then why should the money be okay for the Jew? Because the whole deal then looks at the moment that the goy touched the wine, then immediately, right, if he didn't acquire it, then in that particular case, then it's still technically whose wine? Technically it's still Jewish wine. So in that case, the money would be okay. So let's take a look at the latter part of the statement, which says Modad actually Pasak Dobov, that he measured out and then he just told him a price, what it would be. We said in Asur, and that the money is forbidden in that case, right? The E the Kodimle Dinar of my Dom Asur. But let's take the following case. What if the goy, even before they began the transaction, the goy takes out a dinar. Let's say he takes out a $5 bill and puts it down. He knows that it's going to cost somewhere in the area of $5. But the price is not yet stipulated, okay? But he pays him in advance, okay? Am I Dama Masur? Then why should it be prohibited if afterwards he measures out to the goy and then the goy, right? In other words, do we consider that if he gave him money in advance without any stipulation, does it mean that the goy has acquired a possession by the money that he gave him or not? Because before, what did we say? We say,
if he paid the money, would he okay?
If he paid the money in advance, if he stipulated the money in advance, we said that he could keep the money. But if he didn't stipulate in advance and so on. Now here, he didn't stipulate, but the guy voluntarily gave him money in advance. So it's a different, it's not quite the same as the previous one. So the question is, do we consider it like the second case or the first case? Do we consider it that the goy, even though it was not stipulated in advance, the money would still be okay? Or are we to consider the fact that it was not stipulated?
Well, according to what I learned,
it was not stipulated, and the Jew took the money from the goy without stipulating in advance what it's going to be, then in that case it would be prohibited, right? That's what we said. So that's what he wants to know. You see how man get by the way, you know. So Omalei, so he said to him, Uda Didok, all right, and how about you? He says, the Amrat Mishicha Beva Kechav Mikoina. You say that when the goy takes the object and automatically he acquires it. Am I? Why? Reisha Dama Mutorim. Tell me why then, in that particular case, that the money should be permitted to the Jew. The Sefer Dama Vasur. And in the second case, the Jew it's forbidden to use the money, to take the money. So what do you have to say? He says, Posak, I have to say the following, he says. If he stipulated, right, then samcha date, that in that particular case, the guy knows in advance exactly what's what, and he's willing to pay it. They posak, if the Jew did not stipulate, le samcha date. The guy then is still in the dark and hasn't decided yet whether that's the right price or not. So he says, Dibi dami. My opinion also, it's the same thing. I forgot to go to blame dinner, even though he gave him this dinner, this $5 bill in advance. Posak, decided, and then the guy stipulated what the price was. Samchadate, nevertheless, he was quite, his mind was made up that he was acquiring it. Lay Posak, but as long as the price was not stipulated, lay Samchadate. In that case, he was not sure in his own mind, you know, what it was. And so the question is, did he acquire it? Did he not acquire it? So Amalei Rabbi Dilma Vashi, Toshma. So he says, listen, he says, the Omar Rabbi Chiya Barabo, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Chiya Barabo said the name of Rabbi Yochanan. That's I'm going to say for next week.
See, today is 12-12, was
yeah,
it?
12-12.
Yeah, 12-12, okay. 12-12-2007. And we are now continuing at the very bottom of Avodah Zarah, Daf Ayin Aleph, Omid Beis. Come now to an area which, to me, is a very difficult area. It's difficult because times have changed. Okay. It's changed. What are they trying to prove over here at this point? They're trying to prove, how does a guy acquire possession, right? Does he acquire it by b'shicha, in other words, taking hold of the article, right? Or is he paying the money, is that sufficient or not? And the problem with taking hold of it is that, according to one of the sages, a guy cannot acquire through b'shicha. According to the other one, he does. This is the argument that started back at the previous page between Amemer and Rav Ashi as to what it is. So it continues the argument back and forth over here. So at this particular point, Ravina wants to prove to Rav Ashi that Meshicha is effective for a guy to acquire. But what is the example that he gives him? So he says, Toshma, listen, he says, the Omar Rabbi Chiya Barabo, the Rabbi Yochanan, and what did he say? He said, Ben Noyach Neherag al Poches Bishove Pruto, Velo Nitan Lehishovo. Okay. So, what does this say? First of all, we have to define what is a Ben Noach, literally a son of Noah.
Well, someone who's a guy who does the Noah.
Okay. All right. First of all, a Ben Noach is anybody who's not a Jew. That's number one.
Yeah.
Okay? Means literally that he is a son of Noah, but we cannot call him a son of whom? A son of Israel. Okay. So that's number one. Number two, we know that we have what we call the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, right? That there are seven cardinal mitzvahs that a Ben Noach is expected to observe. Idolatry is one, you know, not to curse God's name, not to murder, not to steal, not to engage in immoral relationships. And also is under an obligation to set up courts of law so that there should be a justice system and so on. Okay? These are the seven cardinal ones that he has. Okay. Now, what is the rule concerning a Jew who steals?
What?
If a Jew steals something, what does the Torah say about it?
He has to give back or equivalent.
Right, he has to give it back, right? In many cases, actually, he has to give back double the amount.
Right.
Or even what we call Tashlume Dalad Vehei. In other words, with the sheep or the ox, I mean, if you steal that, then you have to give back either fourfold or fivefold, depending upon what the animal is. Okay. But in any case, you have to give it back. Okay? That's what they mean over here when they say Hashiva. Okay, return. Okay? It has to be given back. If the Jew doesn't have it, well, obviously, then he has to pay the equivalent of it. And if he can't afford it, then what? Then the Bezdin has the right to sell him into slavery, we learned, right? The Bezdin has the right to sell him into slavery if he can't repay what he stole from the other person.
So what will the Bezdin do?
Huh?
What can they do?
What can they do?
What can the Bezdin do?
Yeah, they can sell him into slavery.
Oh, sell him into slavery.
Right, right. Oh. And, you know, he works for 6 years and... Or he can pay off the debt with his service, okay? You figure out how much is his service worth per year, and, they can pay it off or something like that. Or some people could, let's say, put up the money for him in order to redeem him, to ransom him, whatever you want to say, okay? All right. So this is the case of a Jew. But according to the Gemara in Sanhedrin, yes. Now, I also have to stipulate something else. If you steal from a Jew something which is not worth a pruta, it's a small amount, let's say, it's not even a penny's worth or something like that. Let's put it in terms that we can understand, okay? And then, in that particular case, you don't have to give it back because presumably the person from whom you stole it, he'll be Michael. He says, I don't want to be bothered, to try to get back something that's so insignificant in value, and so on, okay? Now, what is the law concerning a goy who steals?
A what?
A goy, a ben Noach. Okay, so the answer is, according to the Gemara in Sanhedrin, this is what we have over here, right? That ben Noach neherag, right, is put to death, Al-Pochis Mishavaputa, for something that he stole which is not even worth a putta. In other words, even the amount, the smallest amount of it, right. Okay.
Wow.
That he deserves that kind of punishment. Right. Okay? Right. Obviously,
a Jew or another guy?
No, we're talking about a guy.
Yeah, I say, but who is he stealing from?
As we'll find out from Rashi, he's stealing from a Jew in this particular
case.
Okay. Right.
Who gives the sentence?
Who gives the sentence?
Yeah.
Okay. You asked a very good question. So the answer is that the Gemara is later on going to say that you cannot enforce this except through a court. A court would have to make such a ruling. Right.
It can't be a Jewish court.
Could be a Jewish court. In reality, they had no jurisdiction in order to compel anybody to put to death. I mean, we know that particularly the question is, how is the punishment to be carried out? You know, this is the realm of theory, I don't have to tell you.
True.
In the realm of theory.
How do they derive that from the Mishnah?
There are certain traditions that they have. This is a tradition of one of the rabbis and so on. It's accepted that this is halacha, even though it's disputed, but it's accepted that this is halacha. But I don't have to tell you, there are cases where we say it's halacha v'ein morin kan, which means it is a halacha, technically, but we would never dare teach it. We would never dare enforce it or anything like that.
Isn't this the kind of thing which...
Right.
The non-Jewish world, when they study these books, that they come
There's
up
with. There's no question about something like that,
that
right?
That
if they delve into this and they're aware of this, obviously.
But they don't know the niceties of it.
That's right. It's not going to create love for Jews.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but from the Jewish point of view,
yeah.
boy to want to steal something of insignificant value, it's a very heinous thing. I mean,
right.
There must be something behind it if they wanted to take something that was...
Oh, what if he stole it?
There must be something background to it that he's either angry at the Jewish people or angry at the individual or spiteful.
Okay. Right, right. Okay.
Because otherwise, why would he fool around and want to take
okay.
something?
Well, you actually hit upon something that I'm going to see at the bottom of this page. Okay.
But if he did steal something that's of negligible value, there's got to be something nishgut about it.
Right,
well,
right.
Know, and I'm thinking from the other point,
okay.
Doesn't it also emphasize more, again, it's another one of those things that emphasizes that keep yourself separate from the goyim altogether. If you don't get that close, they won't get close enough to steal.
Okay,
right?
But of course Jews still have to deal with goyim.
Yeah.
Okay, now, we have to say a couple of other things about this. The reasoning behind it, in all probability, is because in a world of immorality, they want to stress the fact that it's a very, very serious thing to engage, whether it's stealing, kidnapping, immorality, and things like that. So in order to try to keep the non-Jewish world on a plane of morality, this is why this statement is made. On the other hand, if a Ben Noach keeps the commandments that he has, then in that particular case, he's considered among the Chassidei Ulei Soelo. He's considered among the righteous of the nations, and he has a share in the Elam Haba also. So,
and is he judged as
right.
a Jew, or is he as a God? Would he be judged if he happened to
transgress? No, he wouldn't be judged as a Jew, he'd be judged as a goy, right. But a goyim also can be moral and live a righteous life. For this, they are rewarded by the Levitical Shalom. Exactly. That's the point. Okay. So, now, what technicality is introduced over here? So he says, the very bottom of the page. Okay. He says, and if you say that a goy cannot acquire through Meshicha, then am I wrong? Why should he be killed? In other words, how can you say, you see, I have to stress something else too. When you steal something, in whose possession is it right now?
The robber.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. So he acquires possession of it, okay? Naturally, he has to give back and so on and so forth. But if we say that the guy cannot acquire possession by taking it, so in that particular case, this still belongs to the Jew. So he's not robbing, is he? This is the technicality. yes.
You find some other.
Well, I mean, first of all, in common law, theft is not being title. So, a stolen article confers no title, conveys no title.
Correct.
But I would think here that it's the act of theft rather than the possession. Although this is a nice argument that they raise to try
taking
to
it
contradict
permission.
By saying that there's no possession, so there's no theft. It doesn't quite hold water.
It's
still an imposition on someone else's property.
Of course it is.
An emotional state.
I mean, we are not defending the idea. Just talking about a technicality.
Yeah, we're keeping from getting
from
having to kill.
Right. This is a technicality, okay?
Yeah.
So, in other words, he's quoting this in order to show what? That a guy does acquire through Meshicha. This is what he wants to point out. You understand?
He can acquire it if he...
Yeah, right, right, right.
But he says it is acquiring.
Yeah, that the guy is acquiring it, because otherwise, why would they punish him with death? Because now that it's his, I mean, yeah, so, okay. But if it weren't his, then we would say that it still belongs to the Jew from whom he stole it. So anyway, the answer that they give at the bottom of the page over here is Mishum Nitziarei LeYisrael. He is put to death because he gave tsar. In other words, he gave trouble, pain, and so on to the Jew by stealing from him. Right, right. Yeah. So,
even if something was stolen from a Jew by another Jew,
of course,
the person be disturbed that the article was missing, even police.
Yes. Right.
Even worse, right. How can a Jew do this?
Right.
Would you put me on the
We're on your film.
Okay, so now we're ready for Ayin Beis, Amud Aleph, top of the next page. Umay, now they ask a question about the next part of the statement that was made. Lo nitan lehishanoin says, why cannot the stolen object be returned by the goy? Right? So he says that eino b'teiras hishavo, because as far as the goy is concerned, he says it is not in the law of giving back. In other words, he's not included in those who should give back the item. It's an extreme business, but I mean, it's in order to try to justify what? That the goy should get the death penalty for stealing. So, and if that's the case, then in comes a new theory, which we don't have on the page over here, but which we find in many places in the Talmud. And this theory is what we call Kom Lei B'Darava Mine. If your action is liable to two separate punishments, we don't inflict both punishments. But what punishment do we inflict? The more severe one.
Which one?
The more severe one. Okay? Right. So, as I say, we had that in many cases. If a person, for example, let's say, stole something on Shabbos or something like that, okay? Then he's committed.